Good morning. Welcome to Saturday Morning Sunstone. It's exciting to be here. Thank you for attending our session number 311 titled Ready for Revelation. It's exciting. Before we begin, like normal, we'll all turn off our cell phones and that we will all be respectful and attentive. It's the mission of Sunstone to host thoughtful and respectful dialogue. Please keep that in mind when engaging in the Q&A portion of this session following the remarks of the presenters. Those who cannot abide by these guidelines should refrain from commenting. I think that's hilarious, by the way. This session is being recorded, and you will be able to purchase it after the presentation ends at the registration desk on the main floor. Take advantage of the symposium special by subscribing to Sunstone Magazine. It's 7 issues for the price of 6 at the registration desk as well. Consider also purchasing the Skullcandy official headphones, customized just for Sunstone. Your support goes directly to keeping symposiums and 40 years of thoughtful dialogue alive and sustainable. Don't forget to check out the bookstore in the ballroom, hosted by Benchmark Books. Consider purchasing a book or two to support Mormon studies and scholars. This session is 60 minutes long, and we ask both audience and presenters to keep within the framework of that time so we can allow for the next session to start on time. As a courtesy to other presenters and our attendees, we ask that immediately after this session that we clear the room and we speak outside in the hallway. As a feminist woman raising 3 feminist daughters, hopefully, that it's really exciting for me to be able to present our ordained women panel. Our presenters will be presenting their material in this order. First, we'll start with Lori Winder Stromberg. She's a member of Ordained Women of the Executive Board and has an MA in Humanities from Brigham Young University. We'll forgive her for that. She was the managing editor of the Journal of Modern History, editor of the Mormon Women's Forum Quarterly, associate editor of Sunstone, and Exponent 2 board member. Next, we'll hear from Mark Barnes. And he is a member of the Ordained Women Executive Board and serves on the boards of Mormons for ERA and the Bleeding Hearts Foundation. He graduated from the University of Utah College of Law, that's better, in 1987, and is a practicing attorney. He will be followed by Deborah Jensen, who is a member of Ordained Women Executive Board. She is a professor of communication at Utah State University. Okay. Where she researches social movements and representation of marginalized groups. She will be followed by Natasha Smith, and she is a member of the Ordained Women Executive Board and blogs at FEMWOC, a blog dedicated to the voices of feminist women of color. Natasha describes herself as a Unitarian Universalist Mormon. Sounds excellent. And she will be followed by Brindis Roberts. I love Brindis. And she doesn't even know me, but I love her anyway. Is a chair of the Ordained Women Executive Board and an attorney at her own firm, Jenkins & Roberts, LLC, where her law partner is her ex-husband, who also happens to be her best friend. She is the mother of 2 wonderful daughters and is passionately interested in genealogy. I'll turn the time over to Lori.
Hi, everyone. Continuing revelation is a fundamental part of Mormon theology and could very well account for much of its success. The 9th article of faith asserts that God will yet reveal many great and important things pertaining to the kingdom of God. Mormons believe that the heavens and their canon are yet open. The recent Gospel Topics essay, Are Mormons Christian?, asserts that Mormonism is a restored rather than a reformed Christianity. Unlike other restorationist traditions, which claim restoration of a pure Christianity through a strict reading of the biblical text, Mormons are what I term revelatory restorationists. We acknowledge the text but claim a recovery of early Christianity through the revelatory process, as well as an openness to continuing revelations of the Spirit, both personal and institutional. As we obtain more light and knowledge, our institutions and policies should reflect that increased wisdom. Part of the present tension in Mormonism is over how revelation comes about. Organizationally, all recognize that only the top Mormon leadership has the authority to receive revelation for the church and make significant institution-wide change. Many are content to leave these aspects of the decision-making process solely in the hands of the all-male hierarchy. However, others of us believe members have and continue to play an essential role in the revelatory process by asking questions and articulating a need or concern. A member of the First Presidency, Dieter F. Uchtdorf, said as much in a 2012 worldwide LDS leadership training. I'm quoting from President Uchtdorf. If we stop asking questions, stop thinking, stop pondering, we can thwart the revelations of the Spirit. Remember, it was the questions young Joseph asked that opened the door for the restoration of all things. How often has the Holy Spirit tried to tell us something we needed to know, but couldn't get past the massive iron gate of what we thought we already knew? Unquote. A good question for all believers. The challenge to raise the question of women's ordination was articulated by former church president Gordon B. Hinckley in a 1997 interview with reporter David Ransom. When Ransom asked if the policy on denying priesthood to women could be changed, President Hinckley responded, "Yes, but there's no agitation for that." I'm sure he didn't realize he was articulating a challenge. Ordained Women joins a new generation of faith-affirming Mormon women who are responding to this challenge. A number of us over the years had met with our local church leaders to discuss issues of gender equity and inclusiveness. However, they had no power to address or remedy church-wide structural inequality. Stuck in a sort of catch-22, most personal letters sent to the hierarchy were routinely sent back to stake or ward leaders. Because Mormon women lack institutional authority and access to those leaders who have the responsibility to receive revelation on behalf of the church, public advocacy is one of the few options open to those of us who actively seek greater inclusiveness in the LDS church, including the ordination of women. Why does a religion whose theology appears so hospitable to change often seem so hostile to it? Part of it is the problem of maintaining the integrity of the prophetic voice. If what a past LDS church leader said can be overturned by subsequent leaders, as has happened numerous times, Mormonism must grapple with the tension between continuity and relevance for each generation, between responsiveness to changing attitudes that could mean greater inclusiveness, particularly for women and other marginalized members, and the appearance of bending to social pressure. As I see it, such attention easily and quite charitably could be deflected by a simple institutional response. Like good leaders, we listen to the questions, concerns, and needs of our members and take them to God in prayer.
My assignment was to talk about the mistakes that have been happened within the church because of a lack of inclusivity. Ordained Women is about inclusivity. Specifically, our goal as an organization deals with the lack of gender inclusivity, but we also are supportive across the board when it comes to race, sexual orientation, and all those things. So, anyone here in the presentation last night on Mother in Heaven? Okay. That presentation had a big impact on me and caused me to change up a few things. So, during that presentation, if you know Leslie Peterson, she has a table out here and she's been painting all kinds of amazing paintings. She did a painting of Mother in Heaven, but basically it's a young girl in the sacred grove on her knees with a visitation from Mother in Heaven. And in that presentation, they talked about myths. When I use the word myth, I'm not giving any kind of judgment about whether it's true or not. But all of us have our myths, and they affect the way we see the world. So traditionally, in the LDS Church, we've had a myth of God as this white male heterosexual being, and whether that was born out of the fact that the people starting our religion were white male heterosexuals, or whether that's what Joseph saw in his vision and that translated down, that's not my concern. My concern is that this myth has a large impact on the way we function. If we believe that God and Jesus are white, male, heterosexual, we shouldn't be surprised that we put white, male, heterosexuals at the head of the church. And what that does is it causes a huge blind spot. We can only know our own experiences. And if you go through life as white, male, heterosexual, like myself, you have to go out of your way to even get an inkling of what it's like to be somebody else. You'll never know for sure what that's really like. And unless we include people from lots of different groups within the leadership of the church, mistakes will continue to be made because of this limited vision that we're imposing on ourselves. And so I thought, well, what are some of the mistakes that have been made throughout church history because of this? Polygamy. If women were empowered in the early days of the church and equal with men, do you think we would have made the misstep of polygamy? I'm guessing not. The male-centered view had a bad result. I mean, all the power was with powerful men. The fact that all of a sudden we end up with polygamy, I don't think is a big surprise. The priesthood temple ban against people of African descent had people other than white people had power within the church. There's another mistake that probably would not have been made. I can't imagine that if you had a significant representation of people of African descent within the top leadership of the church, that all of a sudden there would have been a priesthood temple ban. That I don't know if any of you have read Brigham Young's February 5th, 1852 speech to the Utah Territorial Legislature. That kind of speech never would have taken place. That racism would not have been a possibility. More recently, last November 5th, the announcement of, well, actually it wasn't really an announcement, it was an attempt to sneak into the handbook that was caught on November 5th, where the hierarchy of the church thought it would be a great idea to punish the children of people who are same-sex married. Had a huge backlash on the church. The church's reputation suffered greatly. Lots of people left the church. I mean, it was a total disaster. And that had, we had significant representation from the LGBTQ community within the leadership of the church. I'm guessing that would never have happened. More specifically to the mission of ordained women, the all-male priesthood. Had women from early on in the church had been equal to men, had significant power within the church, this is another misstep we wouldn't have made. So this, again, is kind of a circle. The all-male priesthood leads to all these problems that I'm talking about. It's exclusive. It's not inclusive. It causes us to be blind. We can't see sufficiently to make good decisions when we only put men in charge of everything within the church. So my assignment today is to point out problems caused by this lack of inclusivity. If the church were to become inclusive, if the church hierarchy were to reflect all of us and include women, include people of all races, include people of different nationalities, include people of different sexual orientations, if all that were represented within the hierarchy of the church, we wouldn't be so inclined to consistently make these missteps.
Thanks. So, good morning. When we were coming up with the idea of how did ordained women want to participate in Sunstone here in Salt Lake this year, we decided that we wanted to present our theme for the year. And our theme this year is Ready for Revelation. The board, we came up with this, and we came up with a few options. Our supporters voted on this, and I was pushing pretty hard for it when I was the board chair because I feel like Revelation is the heart of what makes the Mormon Church unique. It's really what, as a teenager, it's one of the things that really drew me here, was the idea that the church that I was meeting in the late 80s, early 90s, was not necessarily the church that I would be in 2016. I had a much different view of what the church would look like in 2016. Probably should have listened more to the people who said, that's not what it's going to be. But I like the idea that the possibility is there. One of the most common comments or criticisms that I personally get, and that I'm fairly certain, Leah Marie, that we get on our Facebook and Twitter feed is about ordained women, is that we are trying to force the prophet to receive revelation. And not only that we're trying to force them to receive revelation, but that we already know what we want, and that's inappropriate. That's not how revelation works. I've been told by many, many a new online friend that members are supposed to wait for the prophet to receive revelation, and then we take it and we just shut up about it, right? And that just does not jive for me at all. The promise of the Ninth Article of Faith, as I said, has always been something that I found to be really important. It was, like I said, a draw to me. We have this Ninth Article of Faith that says we believe all that God has revealed, all that God will reveal, and that God has yet to reveal a lot of really cool things. We've taken that very simple idea and built up a lot of scaffolding around it. We've built up this mythology, and I'm going to use mythology in terms of fake, wrong ideas around revelation, and we have a serious misconception now, I believe, in the membership and in the leadership about the way revelation used to work and about the way that it should work. There are plenty of scriptural and church history examples that are of revelation that came from the ground level up. And when I say ground level, like, we're going to talk about Old Testament women approaching prophets and saying, we want this thing to change. And you don't get much more ground level than women in the Old Testament. So I'm going to just focus on two. One, because I like them and they fit perfectly with my end goal. And the other reason I want to focus on these is because they are they're important. They fit with our end goal, and they're largely ignored in church manuals and church lessons. So the first one is Zelophehad's daughters in Numbers. If you look at our Old Testament manuals, you look at gospel doctrine, you look at seminary manuals, and believe me, I've looked at them because I really want to know why people don't understand this is a thing that happens. We do not, Numbers 27 or 26 is not taught. We do not discuss this moment in Old Testament history wherein Zelophehad has all of these daughters and he dies. And inheritance laws were such that his daughters could not inherit any of his wealth, and they were going to be left destitute. And so they went to Moses, and they said, hey, we don't like this. We think that this should be changed. They went to him not only with a question, but they went to him with a solution, you guys. That's important. They said, here's a problem. Here's how it can be fixed. And they said, go to God and ask. And Moses did this amazing thing, you guys. What did he do? He went to God and asked. And God's answer was, the daughters of Zelophehad speak right. Thou shalt surely give them a possession of an inheritance among their father's brethren, and thou shalt cause the inheritance of their father to pass unto them. And then God continues and says, and this doesn't just apply to them. You need to change the law. The law is wrong. That's an important story that I'm sure we can all understand why it's been correlated out of what we teach our youth and what we teach our members. It makes it so that we don't just wait for the prophet and shut up about it when they give us some amazing, shocking idea. It puts the onus on the members to see the problem and then come up with a solution. The next one that I want to talk about really quickly is the founding of the primary. How many of you guys know how the primary was founded? Founded in almost exactly the same way as every other auxiliary group in the church, and that is a woman saw a need. Hooligans running around the streets of Salt Lake City. Aurelia Spencer Rogers said, we got to do something with these kids. And she went to the Relief Society president and said, shouldn't we have a program for the youth? This is what it would look like. And the Relief Society president went to John Taylor, the prophet, and John Taylor said, what a great idea. And the primary was born. A program we still use today. Nobody told her to go talk to her bishop. Nobody told her to go pray again, because the prophet hasn't said this is a thing, so clearly you're being Martin Harris, and that would have been the time to make a Martin Harris comparison, you know, like right after Martin Harris. Sorry, I get a little, that's this, like the third most common thing I get called. Anyway, Sister Rogers discussed her concerns on a plan of action, and then the prophet listened. And you guys, this is from LDS.org. Like, you can Google, how did the Mormon primary start? And it's on our website. It's not like the church doesn't know this is happening. It's not like they don't tell people if they ask, but we don't celebrate it. The mission of ordained women to bring equality to the church and open priesthood ordination to all who feel called to serve requires revelation. And that requires our leaders to step outside their paradigm and their view as white, heterosexual, old, American, Utah-based, rich men. Okay? It requires them to step outside that box and ask a question they would never consider. And beyond that, it requires them to accept an answer that they would probably never consider. And that is something very difficult. And we should feel bad for them, you guys. We should feel really bad for them, because we are asking them to do something that is outside their comfort zone. And it's our job as members to speak up and help them see that the problem is not us asking, it's them not hearing. So we believe that for leaders to envision those questions and possible answers, it's going to take pressure from the membership, and we're inviting all members and anybody else who sees that as a problem to support us, because we are ready for revelation. Thank you.
I'm again going to touch on the ninth article of faith, because as you can see, that is really the foundation of what propels us to ask these questions and to try and be heard by our leadership. And then I'm going to go in and talk more about how the things that you've just heard, how our beliefs and doctrines and the mistakes that have been made, as well as our belief in continuing revelation, inspired this last April's action and what that action looked like. We believe all that God has revealed does now reveal, and we believe that God will yet reveal many great and important things pertaining to the kingdom of God. This article of faith guides all of our actions and all that we do. The very fact that this gospel is a living gospel that grows and expands with our ability to develop and understand is the very foundation that inspires us to continue our efforts towards ordination and plan actions that encourage us to ask our leaders to prayerfully consider our heartfelt desires. As we considered the historical precedent and context of grassroots inspired revelation within our collective Mormon history, we elected the theme, as Deborah mentioned earlier, of Ready for Revelation this year. With that theme in mind, we planned our April action called Ready to Witness. For this action, we asked the leaders of our church to change policy so that women could officially witness sacred ordinances. The Ready to Witness action encouraged a change in the present policy that denies women the ability to be official witnesses at baby blessings, baptisms, and temple marriages, and excludes women from participating in baby blessings at all and being present during young women's interviews, worthiness interviews. Together, we punctuated our commitment to Mormonism and our fervent desire that church policies and practices better reflect the inclusiveness of the gospel of Jesus Christ. And that last sentence is directly from our FAQ on the website about the action. So this action was a multi-layered action for the first time and allowed for a primary contribution from participants prior to the day of the action. This enabled people all over the world to participate without the need to travel or disrupt their schedules. In this sense, it was one of our most inclusive actions. People then wrote personal stories sharing their pain over women being unable to witness specific ordinances and how that affected their experience of these sacred moments and sometimes even their testimonies. All the submitted stories that had been written on a postcard and mailed or submitted online were collected and combined in binders that were delivered to our leaders. On the designated day, people gathered for a devotional and then walked to the church administration building. Deborah Jensen, the board chair at the time, attempted to deliver the letters, but was told by security that they do not accept hand-delivered packages and that the cards and letters would have to be mailed. And Deborah then informed security that they would be waiting outside with the letters until the end of the day if someone wanted to accept them. And we're going to watch a video of that right now.
Thank you.
Here we go.
I'm a few minutes early.
Can I push this?
No. Good morning. Hi, my name is Deborah Jensen. I'm with Ordained Women. I submitted a letter about 2 weeks ago informing the leadership that we would be here to deliver these letters. I was informed yesterday that you don't accept packages, but this is a folder with just papers, and we don't want to mail them. We want to make sure that they get into the hands of our leaders because they carry testimonies and sacred messages from members. Okay, so we will be outside for the rest of the day. During business hours, you'll have representatives outside with them, and we will be here during the daylight hours of conference Saturday and Sunday this weekend if they should decide to answer a letter and send someone out. Thank you. Okay, thank you. Bye.
Even though it's expected.
So stopped and turned around to watch?
Yeah. I just thought.
It's still emotional.
I thought that they would take the letters.
Brenda, you sweet girl.
Thank you. So that was then repeated on Monday. Brendis went up, our current chair, and asked again and was denied again. So as while they were standing respectfully outside, general authorities passed by and attempted to enter the building. But they were also denied access to the building that day.
Wait, it was like state
president. Oh, sorry.
But like state mission president.
Mission president, area authorities. Our website says state or general authorities, so we should change that. So stake presidents walked by, and there were a lot of them that ended up walking by, but I guess had to go through a back door or something, but they weren't getting in the front door. So as was mentioned in the video, board members returned Sunday and Monday, attempting to deliver the cards and letters, and continued to be denied entrance or delivery. The letters and cards were later mailed by FedEx to the First Presidency, Relief Society General Presidency, the Presiding Bishopric, and the Registered Agent for Service for the Corporation of the President of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. Delivery was confirmed. While waiting outside on Friday and Saturday, hundreds of people walked by and interacted with the board members. The board members and supporters standing at our table. Discussions were had, support was given, and even more cards submitted. It gave people the chance to challenge their misconceptions about ordained women and to have productive conversations. As someone who was not able to attend the Salt Lake portion of this action, I greatly appreciated the opportunity to tell my personal story and to send a piece of my heart to the church administration building. In hopes that our leaders would personally read my story and know of my sincerity. Because of this, it felt more so for me than any of the other actions that I was able to humbly ask for prayerful consideration of these desires on a very personal level. I even felt inspired to give my postcard directly to my local leaders and ask them to also read my postcard and consider my experience. I don't know if they ever did, but I know that I am grateful for the opportunity to share my story, to be heard. Unfortunately, as of today, we are still waiting for a response from our leaders regarding this action. Our earnest desires and intimate stories have been met with absolute silence. But we are still waiting, we are still ready to witness, and we are still ready for revelation. Thank you.
Good morning.
Good morning.
My name is Brenda Roberts. My name is Brenda Roberts, and I am the chair of the executive board. And as Natasha said, we are still waiting. But we're not just going to be sitting patiently at home waiting. We are also still going to be acting and still asking and still putting ourselves and our bodies and our hearts and our feelings and our emotions there in front of our leaders. We're going to be asking them to see us, to hear us, and listen to us. It is my pleasure to introduce to you or describe to you what is going to be our action in October of 2016.
Oh, are we standing?
Thank you.
We will tell you. The title of this action is Ready for Revelation 2. Is there no one who will hear me? And it will occur on Saturday, October the 1st, from 11:30 a.m. to 2 p.m. at the Church Administration Building, which is 47 East South Temple, Salt Lake City, Utah, 84150. And what it is a direct action to approach the leaders of the church. And we will stand sentinel in front of the Church Administration Building, holding our purple ordained women umbrellas lined along the sidewalk in front of the building while church officials are meeting inside between sessions. This action is one in a long line of our attempts to meet with our leaders to get them to hear us. And what we will do on Saturday is each participant will climb the stairs of the Church Administration Building and ask the question, is there no one who will hear me? Ask for an opportunity to meet with our church leaders or a representative of our church leaders to share our thoughts, our desires, our dreams, our hopes. We invite you to join us. We invite you to share your desires, your dreams, and your hopes. We understand that it is difficult sometimes to ask and be rebuffed, but we will not receive anything if we do not ask. Thank you.
I think I speak for all of us. That was pretty amazing to hear from these wonderful, I was going to say women and Mark, who are here to
preach. Honorary women.
So, that's right. So grateful for what they've had to say. We'd like to open it up to any questions. We have a microphone here. Please come forward.
Yeah, thank you. I'm Doug Bowen from St. George. As a longtime religious skeptic, I'm wondering, you talked about looking through the scriptures to find instances where grassroots made a difference. I'm wondering if there is any incident in the entire scriptures of a revelation that has not had a human origin. Secondly, as to those who go online to attack you for wanting to turn around the method that God works through. I'm just wondering, if God is this all-powerful person in the sky, why does he need semi-literate people with poor critical thinking skills to defend him? The third thing is, what's the likelihood of LDS leaders reading a single one of your stories? I think it's great what you're doing, but I think they're treating you like misbehaving children, and the best way to deal with that is to ignore it. I think the only way there's going to be any action is if there's plenty of people from the news organizations there and you're on the TV.
Thank you. Anybody want to address that?
Was that directed? I think that was directed at me. You guys couldn't see, but he was looking like right at me as he was talking. Well, so for the first question, I am not a scriptorium, and I passed my scripture mastery and graduated from seminary. But no, probably not. And I don't have any problem with the idea that even modern-day revelation, you can pretty conveniently tie our modern-day revelations, the big ones especially, to outside pressure and political expediency. I have no problem with God acting through the federal government to encourage us to end polygamy. I have no problem with that at all. And I don't think the two are like mutually exclusive. So yeah, there's always a human element. Second question. Oh, mean people on the internet. Mean people on the internet are feel that we are threatening something they care very much about. And my experience is when we stand outside the church administration building and they talk to us face to face, they recognize very quickly that we are not trying to threaten something they care about. So mean people on the internet don't necessarily bother me. There was that one weird fake Twitter account that like came at me for 5 days. That was kind of rough. Ordained Women Exposed, I don't care about you. If you're here, you mean nothing to me. But mean people on the internet, like we try to look at them and say, these are people who feel threatened, who feel like we're trying to ruin something they care about. And I understand that. So I try to attack it from that end. And then media, news cameras are great. We end up with the church feeling very threatened, feeling like we're trying to embarrass them. We have to walk a very fine line because I don't think anybody at this table wants to publicly embarrass the church. What we want is for them to hear us. And when Brenda says that this is a long history of us trying to contact them, what you know about what we've tried to do to talk to the church leaders is maybe half of what we've tried to do to talk to church leaders. We have written countless letters. We've spoken, we've tried countless back channels to try to speak to them without ever letting the media know. So eventually one of them's got to sneak through, right? Please.
Okay, not a question, but a comment.
Can I just add one more thing with that? Just to reiterate what I said in my piece, the final line of what I said is, it seems to me it's so simple to diffuse the issue of responding to or caving to social pressure. All they have to do is adopt an attitude that is, we listen to you, we listen to your concerns, your needs, like good leaders, and we take them to God in prayer.
Absolutely.
I'd just add, if they feel embarrassed, it's because they do embarrassing things. I mean, it is very easy to diffuse all of that just by talking to us. We've tried every which way to engage the leadership in a discussion, and they just refuse. I mean, if you're going to park a garbage truck in front of us and you feel embarrassed when that's on the news, there's a reason you feel embarrassed. Quit doing those things. Just engage in the conversation, and you don't need to feel embarrassed. That would be my response.
Yeah, it's very telling that after the initial Ordained Women coming out, that the one talk that addressed women in priesthood by Dallin Oaks said absolutely nothing about addressing the question of, have you prayerfully considered this, or is this just some patriarchal legacy that's been passed, kicked down the road for 6,000 years? And they could have completely diffused the situation if they just said, yeah, we prayed about it, and the answer was no. That's all they needed to say, really. My comment was a follow-up to what Deborah said.
That talk was very interesting, though, because what it signaled, and a number of other talks, is that they actually are responding in publicly, not to us directly, but publicly, to the whole question of women in priesthood. And we've gone from, in the last, I would say, maybe 3 years or so, we've gone from talking about priesthood in terms of, and women in terms of a power that we enjoy the blessings of the priesthood, that all members enjoy the blessings of the priesthood, to we enjoy the blessings of the priesthood, but now women have the power of the priesthood, somehow participate in the power of the priesthood. That's not, they haven't really defined that or articulated how, but somehow the power of the priesthood. And in his talk, Elder Oaks' talk, he even said women exercise the authority of the priesthood in their callings. Now that's mind-blowing. What would they mean by that, though, hasn't been articulated. But I mean, I think women of the church should run with it.
Yeah. So I'll make this quick. You talked about revelation in the scripture. And if you think about scriptural examples of revelation, with the only exception I can think of, Paul on the road to Damascus, where he's clubbed over the head with a revelation, in virtually every other instance, it's being on your knees, begging, pleading, pestering the Lord, and sometimes that takes days or weeks, whatever. That's the example. In every case, the Lord never drops revelation out of the sky on some or thumps you up the head with it. It's always you coming to the Lord and demanding, pleading, begging, crying for an answer. And I think you're onto something with that. And I think that's the point you should run with in this. Anyway.
Yeah, we're told to weary the Lord, right?
I was really glad that you showed the little video of Deborah going up and asking, because when I had it described to me, I was thinking of what happened with our first April and October actions, where we went on Temple Square and the guards, I don't know what they're called, security guards or whatever, we looked them in the face and asked them for entrance. I was like startled. It was like you were on the telephone.
Yeah.
You did not address them face to face. They did not allow you to do that. And of course, if you have to look at somebody and they actually have to look at you, it is a different situation. I mean, in my excommunication court, you know, I hadn't met the, except for the state president, I haven't met these men before. But when they look at you, you know, they say, well, you do seem like a really nice woman, but, right? But the fact that they have to face you is a really important part of the action. And for me, this points out another thing that I would add to your list, Mark, hierarchy. Because if the church were functioning right, we would have a community of people whose voices would be heard, that we would listen to the least in our community. And I see that as an equally, you know, bad practice that absolutely needs to be addressed, that we are not allowed. The idea that you cannot face these men, that is really horrific. And by the way, I want to also add one last thing. Back in like 1990, the Mormon Women's Forum, we asked to speak to leaders about women's issues. And we finally, because I had a friend, got an audience with the Relief Society presidency. And there was one kind of lower general authority, but, you know, we were not allowed to speak to anybody else. And again, for me, doctrinally, this is so problematic. Every person, the Doctrine and Covenant says, one of the purposes of the restoration should be that every person can speak in the name of the Lord. But that is being violated, and I think it is a horrible thing for men as well as for women, how that happens.
So one thing, really quickly, just what you couldn't see is there's a glass door. First of all, some of us were shocked. It had been a couple of years since we'd been in the church administration building, and I think most members would be surprised at how difficult it is to even get in the building. So there's a glass door. They had a woman security guard on duty, and we were looking at each other. I could probably point her out. I think she was a security guard from the second action. I'm pretty sure she was. I remember her very clearly. So there's that, right? Like, I was actually kind of startled, too, when I walked in, and you feel like you're standing in a cage. The second thing is, what Brenda didn't tell you is, on Monday after we were turned away from the administration building, we went to the General Relief Society building, and we looked classy, right, Brenda? Like, we looked good.
We
had
did.
Blazers on and everything, you guys. And so we looked super official, and we walked in, and, like, all these volunteers were so lovely, and they asked us if we wanted a tour, and we said, sure. And one of them actually said, you look important. Would you like to meet with a member of the Relief Society presidency? And I was like, yeah, oh, we super would. And then I said, we're with ordained women. And she went, ugh. And she went upstairs, and all of a sudden, she came back downstairs and said, nobody's available. Like, she even said, nobody's here. No one is here, but here's where you can mail your stuff. So I think probably had we not identified ourselves, we might have gotten an audience, but we've always been very clear that we're not going to sneak into anything.
And I think also, if I may just interject here, we were not able to interact face-to-face with that security guard, but standing there all day Saturday, standing there all day Sunday, all of the members, all of the stake presidents who couldn't get in the building and were coming down asking us how to get in.
peeking through the windows.
Yeah, people peeking through the windows.
All day in the administration building looking out at us, like seeing if we're still there.
So, but people did interact with us. They took our water bottles. I mean, there was a senior missionary couple. They passed by so many times that it was like we became friends with the woman. And she really looked like she wanted to take our letters and give them to someone. So I think one of the beauties of that action is that people got to see that we didn't have horns on our head, that we weren't getting ready to take scaffolding hooks and rappel down the walls of the temple, that we were members just like them who had needs, desires, hopes, and who wanted to convey them to our leaders.
So I work downtown, and on any given day, if you walk by the administration building, the curtains and the blinds and things like that are open in lots of the offices. It was really interesting that when we were there that entire weekend, it was like they had been told, close all the shutters, you know, everything needs to be closed. But it was like they couldn't help themselves. They would just peek out. And then as soon as they saw you looking at them, they would shut them really quickly. But there was one woman at one point in time, open, bottom level, who like snuck behind the drapes, gave us this big thumbs up.
She was watching, and we waved back, and she was like,
"During the luncheon."
And it was during the luncheon.
So this is what we're aimed at in the next action. They do have on Saturday between the sessions a luncheon, and I think it's like the Relief Society presidency prepares it for the brethren or something like that.
Yeah.
I think so. Yeah.
Lori is shocked, you guys. We have shocked Lori.
I just
want to
make sure that anything we say is
our understanding.
Our understanding, yeah. So we know that they are supposed to be there at that time. We're going to go. We're going to make the ask. You know, we'll see what happens, but we'll give them one more. We'll give them another shot here and let them try and do the right thing.
I can't wait to hear what Leah Marie is going to do.
Hi, who are you? So, yeah, my name is Leah Marie Silverman. I'm actually going to make this awkward and turn it around. It's especially awkward for you. Hi. So, I am on the executive board as well. And whoever it was, and I'm sorry, I don't know where you are now, that asked a series of questions, one wasn't addressed, and I have a response, so I'm going to share it. The question was, what are the odds, do you think, of them having read the letters? So I'm going to tell you that for the last action, that was my job, I created the submission form, and I collected the letters and made sure that they were prepared to be delivered. So I read every single one of them. And I am here to tell you I am fundamentally changed. I already had my own story for why I was ready to witness, but then I read story after story after story of pain. Women who sat in the back of a SACR meeting room with a microphone that wasn't working and couldn't hear their own baby's blessing. Women who couldn't get from the bathroom to the front of the font fast enough and missed their child being baptized because nobody thought to wait for the mother. Both men and women who would have loved to have a beloved female relative be the witness to their wedding sealing but couldn't, because it had to be a man, and so they had to choose sometimes arbitrary strangers to stand in. So there are so many stories of pain and anguish and desperate desire for that to be changed. But here's the thing. I can't imagine reading all of those letters and not being fundamentally changed from it. I want to believe that they've read them, but since we don't have a response, I can't believe that they did, because if they read them, they could not have withheld a response. So,
sorry, I'm just gonna. That was terrible. Like, you made me cry a little bit. Also, there's another question that has been asked that we haven't answered, and before you get to talk, I'm gonna answer it. You can get an umbrella at Ordain. Where did they go? Joanna. Talk to the people.
So we'll have a couple here. I think we'll have like a dozen or so here. And there'll be a Sunstone special suit. This is definitely the cheapest place to get them. That we will be having them on our website. It's Ordained Women's Shopify account. You can go to our Facebook page And right on the Facebook page it says shop, and you can click on that. What we're going to do is have them to purchase, so you can come and do that. If you cannot be at the action, if you live far away, if you can't be there because you will have too much social ramifications, we understand that. But we need you with us. So what we're asking you to do is to come buy one. And what we're going to do is, if you buy one and you can't be there, you make a note on the account, and I will write your name on your umbrella, and someone will go to the window and ask for you. And then we will send you your umbrella, signed by the person who walked from your proxy. So please do that. That's going to be on the Facebook page. So we need you. Yeah.
So I hate to do this. We have like 5 minutes, and then they're really going to boot us because there's an extra class that's coming in right after in about 15 minutes. So we can go over just a little bit, but not very much. So just so that we're aware.
All right. First, I want to thank everyone for trying to talk face-to-face. And as Margaret was saying, the idea that you have a general conference where no one confers about anything generally or specifically is a little discouraging to me. I really appreciate, Mark, what you were saying about mishandling. The church is just incredibly inept about this. I mean, if they had let us in on that first action, the headline would have been Radicals Disrupt General Conference, right? Instead, it was Church Park's dumpster in front of people asking very politely to attend their meetings. And finally, in response to the very first question that was asked, does Revelation ever come straight from God, not through a human intermedium? The more interesting question is, in the Bible, is there ever an instance where that revelation comes from the recognized church authority and not from someone outside the power structure calling them to repentance? No. I don't think it does.
Good question.
No response.
I love this scripture. It's about when Jesus changed his mind. Matthew 15:28. Jesus went away from there and withdrew into the district of Tyre and Sidon, and a Canaanite woman from that region came and began to cry out, saying, "Have mercy on me, Lord, Son of David. My daughter is cruelly demon-possessed." But he did not answer her a word. And his disciples came and implored him, saying, "Send her away, because she keeps shouting at us." But he answered and said, "I was sent only to the lost sheep of the house of Israel." Or to the male members, you might look at it that way. But she came and began to bow down before him, saying, "Lord, help me." And he answered and said, "It is not good to take the children's bread and throw it to the dogs." But she said, "Yes, Lord. But even the dogs feed on the crumbs which fall from their master's table." Then Jesus said to her, "O woman, your faith is great. It shall be done for you as you wish." And her daughter was healed at once. It helps to ask. It helps to keep asking. It helps to keep asking even if you're from outside the system. He changed his mind. They could change their minds too.
Sorry, Toby, age before beauty. Thank you for doing this. I am involved in several letter writing campaigns where we're sharing our stories of our LGBT loved ones. We are witnessing in these letters. We are witnessing. And I think if they are not reading them, it's because they are afraid of the responsibility of being witness to us. Because once we witness each other, once we are witnessing you, and you are witnessing us, and we are witnessing our loved ones, we are responsible. It's what God asks us to do. We see each other. We hear each other. And so I think that's the important thing to remember. We are in the act of witnessing. We are just asking for a recognition of it. And I do understand, because I am dealing with the repercussions of being a witness and of people just seeing that automatically as a danger. The fear is real, and I appreciate you saying we got to understand how terrifying this is for them, and at the same time, we have this responsibility. So thank you, And I do appreciate the questions. If you can, you know, back those up with any actual scriptures of there never has been a time that I know of where a revelation came top down. And if there is, great, but we need those resources to back us up on this is how it works. It's how it's always worked.
Beautiful. Thank you. We just have a couple minutes is all. Last comment. And then, Brindis, do you want to do a final comment before we head out? Go ahead, please.
It was mentioned earlier that the part of the problem right now is that it's still this whole image, the whole all-white male hierarchy. There was a bit of hoopla made several months ago when they decided to have the three presidents of the women's organization have their pictures in the church office building, I guess, and the implication was that they were going to be involved in the order with what goes on in the church for the first time. Is there any have you seen any evidence of them being influential in what's going on? Maybe they don't want to be. I don't know.
Thank you. Short response, anyone on the panel?
Not that I'm aware of.
Well, they recently put two women on some major boards.
Yeah, but is there any evidence that that's making a difference in the decisions? Not that I'm aware of.
That we're aware of.
Thank
so
you.
One closing remark.
Please,
and just
Natasha, please.
As we close here, I just want to encourage everyone, if you are in a position to do so, to please log on to or go visit our site, ordainwomen.org. And if you can submit it and haven't yet, please submit a profile. And if you're not in a position where you can do that, please like our Facebook page. And thank you so much for coming.
Thank you.